What's going on, everybody? It's your boy HD, and we have our special guest today, Miranda, for episode 7 of the Let's Talk Tech podcast. Let's give her a round of applause, please. All right, for y'all that don't know, Miranda runs mbs.tech.io, and I didn't ask you this before, but the MBS, is that your initials?
So it's a combination of my initials and my daughter's initials. So
okay.
Yeah.
Got you. All right. Yeah. So we're going to get right into it. I'll try to start more so like with your early years. I saw that, I read the About Me, and it said that you saw your dad set up a whole computer network, I think around the age of 8.
Yeah. So,
go ahead.
Oh, okay.
No, you go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, so growing up, okay, my dad, one of the smartest people I know, he graduated from high school 15, then had to wait to go to the Army. He passed the SF. It was so high. His test score was so high that that he qualified for all the great, you know, kind of tech jobs, but he was just too young. So eventually he was able to get in. Once he left, he worked for IBM. So he worked for IBM early on in the computer age. So like a computer, remember, was like a whole room. He still has the key on his keychain from when he was like setting up, you know, that big room, which is one computer. So once he left IBM, he just did like volunteer work for our church, and which was had a school that we went to, and he set up every single computer in that school, and my sisters and I either helped him do that, watched him do that, and that's how I got like my first introduction to computers. So I was helping him build computers at a very, very early age.
Yeah, speaking of that, my next question I thought was going to be, and I just put it together, since you said 2 years after that you built your own, so I'm gonna say around the age of 10 you built your own computer.
I was definitely building my own computer. Like, it's so strange because back then I thought that was like completely normal. Like that was just like my life. So for me to like do that, you know, once school got out and my dad came to do that, like, you know, doing that 2 years later, that was just like kind of normal for me. You know what I mean? So yeah, I was building my first computer at about 10.
That's cool. That's interesting. I don't know when I broke my first one, but we'll get into it. But so before we get into like some of the good questions, I kind of put that part out there from about you. Mm-hmm. I'll let you go ahead and introduce yourself for the viewers that, you know, don't know about you.
Okay. So do you want me to kind of like tell my story or just like where I am kind of now?
You can do, you know, whatever, you know, you want to do. And, we'll rock with, like I said, that's the good thing about recording this. I'll cut this part out, so it doesn't matter, no way.
Cool. Okay, great. Okay, so a little bit about me. I'll just kind of do a little snippet about my background. So I'm currently working in cybersecurity. I kind of finally found my calling in life at the age of 32. I kind of figured out where I want to be. I didn't start there. I kind of had an unconventional start to tech. I didn't start in help desk, which I would never work, but I actually worked on the project side of an engineering program when I got out of college. That was my first experience into STEM. I didn't think I was really good in math. I just knew you had to have like understand math and be well-versed in math to be in any form of STEM, which is not the case. So when I got onto that program, I got my first clearance, which is a secret clearance. And then I was working for, so my major in undergrad was international relations. Like that was my major that helped me graduate college. Cause I was like, I did horrible in college. And I was like, I told my counselor, like, what can I do? Like what major can I pick where I can graduate? You know what I mean? So, but it actually turned out well. So once I got that job, it was for a missile that was multinational funded. And so, I got to travel around the world on this missile that was being built, which is, you know, engineering program, you know, got my clearance. I'm traveling throughout the world. I worked as kind of like a project coordinator, project analyst there. And so I had to understand what was being said in the room. Because I was kind of like a fly on the wall, you know, doing actions, minutes, things of that nature. But I, you know, for me to like write out these, for these to make sense, I had to understand what, you know, what they were talking about in these meetings, right? And so, mind you, these people have like huge accents, you know, I'm in these different countries, but so the people, which is I'm so grateful for, they actually taught me everything I knew. And so that's when I started to build kind of this space of, okay, this kind of techie, which I didn't know yet, in project management and those. And so I kind of navigated through my career. Like I've worked for the White House, with technical programs. I worked with so many different agencies within the government. So which landed me to where I am now, which is working as an ISO. And then I have a role as a SharePoint admin. But, so right now I'm working as an ISO for an agency. I'm also working toward my master's in cybersecurity as well. So that's a little snippet of my background.
And that's what's up. And see, that's like, everything is like pretty interesting. I tell people all the time, but like, you know, with my endeavors that I've started that, you know, I've just been networking a lot and meeting all different type of people because I had a consultation with someone who wants to be in the SO space. And I have a friend. What area are you in? What region are you in?
So I'm in the Washington, D.C. area. It's so funny, though, how I became an ISO. And I'll tell you now, you know, for listeners who are like, oh, I don't know how to, you know, navigate from the space of this part of tech or maybe not even tech. And also I came on as a project manager. Right. But I worked in a space where I had to improve like process improvement. Right. So I noticed that the security team, security and compliance team had a ISO process that was horrible. There was always a breakdown. We had to get these ATOs, these ATTs signed by our CIO. And it was a mess. And so we had things expiring, you know, it was a mess. So I said, hey, I see you guys are kind of struggling. Like, let me just help you improve the process, if anything, right? And so that's when I first got my taste of cybersecurity, because they're like, well, yeah, you can definitely help us. And one, you're a great writer. So I know you can put together these memos and then make it sense. So that's how I kind of moved into that space of cybersecurity. And then the more and more and more I understood the process, they taught me, because they had such a short on staff, they taught me everything. So I started to assess controls. I started to do POAM. So I began to slowly but surely evolve into this space of an ISO. But, and that's only because I did process improvement and I'm a great writer, you know? So,
yeah.
Those transferable skills.
Definitely a big point, because on my last blog, when I was talking about Sec Plus, I was telling people how when you go to an organization or company, the biggest thing that a lot of times they're looking for is somebody who can solve problems. And I was like, if you can solve a problem, you can prove your value. And so that's kind of the thing that I preach out to people most of the time. Sometimes entry level is not really, but when you're trying to get the big money, 9 out of 10, they got some stuff going on that you need to fix. So I'm like, you can prove you can do that by your resume or whatever you say in the interview, then you'll be straight. Mm-hmm. But speaking of that, I was going to say with the ISO thing is I'm going to probably connect her with you because I have a friend that's an ISO, and now I'm talking to you. But as far as that space, that's not my lane that I know about as much. So I'm a person that's like, well, you know what? I don't know that much about that. Let's go holler at this person just because, you know, that's what I like to do. You know, I focus in the realm of more so like blue team right now with cybersecurity and with knowledge of like red team stuff too. So I'm better at that. Now let's get into.
That's crazy. Like I want to be more technical, so I'm trying to move into that space. Yeah. I like kind of being the ISO is so high level. I guess because of my agency and I work so closely with the CIO, I like to kind of be in this quiet space, kind of just getting kind of stuff done. Like, oh, Miranda, you did a great job of that. Thanks, and I go home. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like my ISO is so high level and so I hate it. So I'm trying to move into more of a technical space.
Like what?
You know, and that's, I think I know which way I want to go, but I want to finish out my program, my master's program. And then I think I would really because I kind of get my feet wet in a little bit of everything with my program. And then I think I can really decide on what I really, really want to do. But I know I want to be way more technical.
Okay. You know, I'd be asking because I always checking our internal sites and crap like that for referrals and stuff. I'm like,
okay, okay.
And then especially with so much stuff being remote, I'm like, you know, it's really the pandemic like a blessing in disguise because like now people ain't telling you to come in. They're like, oh, hey, it's 100% remote. I say right. Yes. What? Let's see, because it was funny that you did rag on help desk. You know, I'm the help desk champion. But like I tell most people, like you're absolutely right though. If you feel like you had a skill set where you don't have to do it, I just needed somewhere to work. Like I tell some of my clients, like, man, you already got enough skills. You don't have to go do that. I'm like, we're gonna make sure that you don't have to go work in a help desk. That's for people who really don't know what they want to do and they're just trying to get some type of experience. Mm-hmm. You have experience, even though it's not directly related to cyber, but you got experience. So you don't have to go do that.
Yeah.
But what made you start MBS Tech?
So I've always, always enjoyed helping people. I think that is really my true calling in life. And so even in college, I've been like big brother, big sister. I just always love giving back, especially to my people. And I've done like huge backpack giveaways, sent people off to prom just on my own, just because it's just like second nature, just who I am. And so I just wanted to create this space with my tech background to help people kind of springboard into their role in tech. And the reason why I created, I have this space where I offer these services, but I really, really, really wish I just want to do it for free. It's just that I just have so much going on that for me to like take time to do certain things, like I just know that it makes sense to get paid for. But long term, I'll tell you this, and I haven't really told anyone this is my goal, but and I feel like if I put it out there, then I just hold myself accountable. So I'm in school getting my master's in cybersecurity technology. Once I graduate, next year, I plan to get my doctoral degree. And so long-term goal is like to be in the space of director of diversity and inclusion. I already have these huge, connects with people in these large tech organizations. So I know that I can move into that space one day and that be a part of me, being that liaison that kind of stop that gatekeeping and get these, Black people into tech. The technical world pays great money. I'm pretty sure you see like these wealth tweets or these wealth articles about Black wealth. And so that along with that, then I want to create like a program too that I can eventually implement into public schools to help students, especially inner city, especially Black children, to gain these skills in the tech world while in public school. Because I remember there was a time where like in my high school, they had like kids who could do like learners to be like a mechanic or a plumber or a hairdresser, and you would graduate high school with these skills and be able to get a good job, right? And so I don't think that is really there anymore. And so with the world moving into such a digital space, I think that if I'm able to implement this program within public schools and these students go through this program for 4 years and they're getting these certs and they're able to graduate and get a good paying job. And so like that's like my long-term goal. Like I just really, really, really want to help people. And I know with tech, I can definitely change lives. So
that's what's up. Yeah, that's pretty much kind of similar to me. I always help people out, but the reason why I stopped doing it for free is number one, it do take out time out of my day to do stuff. Mm-hmm. Number two, the person you help respects it when they pay for it.
I agree.
So it's just like, ain't nobody trying to waste time. I don't care if you pay me $1 or $5. You're not trying to waste your money.
Mm-hmm.
And then honestly, number three is, I had to put so much investment, with money and stuff like that into my career that, you're getting an investment anyways. And for me, if anybody goes to the site, I don't have, super expensive stuff right now. And so if they go to, it's like, yeah, he's trying to help. Like I gave an example, like this past week, I think it's like only been 2 weeks. Like my latest client, like it's been like 2 weeks and he's finding him a security analyst role.
Nice.
Coming from IT support. And we just was talking about it. I was like, yeah, man, my subscription service cancel at any time. You cancel the day, you know. it's more so, I think I'm going to start pushing my subscriptions a little bit more. And it's not because of, I'm trying to get 100 people in, but I think it's the better benefit for people because they can always come back or cancel, but they just get more benefit than maybe paying the one-time thing where they don't talk to me as often.
Right.
But so I definitely feel that. And I've also thought about eventually getting to a point where I can go back to like my high school or coordinate and just ask them about curriculums and what are they showing. Like when we were in high school, they did have this thing where you can go to think called the Career Center. I think they loosely touched on networking, but from where I'm from, it's not a big area for like, especially like cybersecurity. Like it's still only like one place you can technically kind of work at around here.
Oh wow!
For it, and that's pretty much what that is. So I don't know if that'll ever change in the area, but that's why I'm happy. It's funny. Like I actually recently just had like my first Hispanic consultation the other day, but most of the people that reach out to me, it might be, I don't know if it's neck and neck, but I think it's mostly like black women. And then you got some black men. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I mean, I'm just happy that, you know, they're finding out about it. I got my master's instead of going to cybersecurity. I did my master's in IT management for the fact that I knew eventually I'd be in management because it's also give me the ability to bring people in that I want to bring in.
Right.
So, and I mean, I have a say so in that now as well. So that's the reason why I kind of moved the way I did once I figured out, okay, boom, I'm going to go this route. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. And then that's going to help me achieve my goal of, you know, having people that look like me at work. Because, man, the misnomer about us is like we don't work. But truth be told, a lot of times we was never in the spaces to work. And it'd be the others that be at Bull.
Man, listen, I have so many, so I'll say this, I have so many experiences, especially like in the beginning of my career, and I think it's such a blessing that people who are like better than us or are coming into tech, there are maybe, you know, at least one other black person there or somebody that looks like them, right? When I first got it was all white men. Like I felt like I had to look a certain way, I had to talk a certain way. And now like one of my teams is like all black women, like including myself. Like there's not even a man there. It's just all from the director all the way down. But I think that is, you know, once we're in that space, like you say, of that management space, like we want to move how we move. And that's to always help us. Like, and that's natural. So I think that I think we have to get into this space, whether and that, I guess that's tech, but then we also have to move into these management and director roles to really create change. So I think you're definitely moving in the right direction. So, yeah.
Especially, you know, it's crazy because I'll tell you offline, I can't divulge too much because people be paying attention to what I be saying now.
Right.
But my team, I've been trying to get like, you know, a black woman on my team for the longest. Mm-hmm. And because for two things, they're great analysts. They already lurk for free. I mean, if you got a girl, they're going to come find something from 15 years ago. I didn't even know you then. But for that reason, and I know they was going to work, they'll work hard because they know they don't, those opportunities aren't plentiful for them. And it was going to show pretty much most of the men up. And I know if I make them get uncomfortable, they're going to either do one or two things, complain or quit. And I'm happy with either one. But that hadn't happened yet. But the reason why I brought up the other is the reason why I was up late, because we had a situation happen yesterday that could have been prevented from a person who technically should have been fired. I don't know why my company makes it so hard to fire people, but that dude should have been fired. And,
was it more like a disgruntled employee, or was it more like he just wasn't doing his job?
Somebody that don't care. That's really
I get what you mean. Yeah.
So that's pretty much where that goes. And I was just like, everybody, actually, I can say this because I mean, this is how I know him. We work together at two companies. So me, Tayon Tech, And then my other coworker were like the three black guys on the team. It was like the three best people at one point in time when we was there. So that's what it is when it comes to that. We always come in and work hard. And shoot, I came from the bottom. Like
you say you worked at help desk, so.
Yeah, but even before that, though, throughout college, I worked at Target. So even help desk was a step up. But help desk actually, like, people rag on help desk. I think it depends on the help desk you're on. Like, it's funny that when you said your first role, you did get a secret clearance. I was doing help desk for TSA, so I had to get a secret clearance.
Nice.
And that help desk was pretty cool in the sense that since it's in a government environment, everything's really controlled. So once, you know, you get the hang up, you straight, because they don't make too many changes in a government setting.
And but you know what I'm saying about help desk though, in the government space, because I really have a lot of government contracting experience. Government, especially because I'm much higher up than what I was when I started. The help desk is really a good sweet spot for organizations within the government that it's almost like that gatekeeper to like complaints to the CIO. Like I've seen stuff where another CIO has like hit an RCIO, like my computer just shut off. Like what? And so like her, like an RCIO is a female, but she's like, you know, within us, why didn't they call the help desk? Like if the help desk would have, you know, they would have called the help desk, then this would have been resolved. So I think, you know, kind of that help desk, like frontline defense of like a lot of issues. And you have to be so patient.
Especially, if they do it right, they'll let you know what type of user you're talking to when they call in. But it gave me some incredible soft skills. Like I was able to, first of all, I used to talk to people from everywhere. So I started recognizing when people would be from certain areas. I forget a lot of the acronyms for the airports, but we were watching that new Michael B. Jordan movie yesterday. And he was like, yeah, I'm headed to Washington Dulles. And I was like, I think that's IAD.
It is.
See, that's the way you had to like kind of say a lot of things. And it was pretty cool. It really helped you solve problems because, you know, you could call in a certain way. I was like, okay, cool. I'm going to approach this conversation this way because she's really not mad at me. She mad her stuff don't work.
Right.
And so it's one of those things, but at the same time, it's not something you want to stay in. A lot of the clients that, you know, if you ever had a help desk person, they've been there over a year or two, and now they get pigeonholed into help desk stuff because people don't want to try to put them in other crap. So that's one of the things I tell you, hey, man, if you do help desk a year, 6 months, and get out, honestly.
I agree.
That's how I feel about that one. Man, while I was talking, I thought about something else that I was going to ask you, and I forgot about it. We'll just roll like this. Did you go to college in DC area?
No, I went to the illustrious North Carolina A&T State University.
Okay.
So
NCAT.
Yeah.
NCAT, right?
Aggie Pride. NCAT, A&T, you know, whatever one you want to call it. But that's as long as you're not saying AT&T,
yeah, I think one of my coworkers, I think she went to that school too. Mm-hmm. I think Austin went there. I'm going to ask her, did she go there? But that's what's up, man. So technically, always been on the East Coast then for you, huh?
Yes, definitely always on the East Coast.
I think I know what I want to say. So I think you said it earlier because you already ran computers and you did international studies. How did you exactly get that first tech role? Was it just networking? Somebody knew your dad, or you just knew somebody, just applied? I mean,
okay, sure. So yeah, my first tech role was just through me applying. So in college, I'll say, and I tell people this all the time, if you want a new job, make a job out of getting a new job. If you know you hate that job, you better make even when I was in college and I wanted to get my first job or internship that summer, I used to spend 8 hours applying for a job. Like, I'm not playing. And I have a spreadsheet, like, this is where I apply for. So I was getting amazing internships in the summer. So I had a good resume when I graduated. And so I think, and honestly, it's so much easier, I think, in where I live in the DC area, because there's so many government agencies. So it's a lot of jobs here, a lot of private companies too. But I just simply applied. And they called me back. And it's funny you said, you know, it's funny. When I got hired, my boss told me that he wanted to hire a Black woman. And so I don't know how he knew I was a Black. Oh, I guess he found out I was a Black woman once I got to the interview. So my resume was strong, right? But when I got to the interview, I did well. But when I finally got really, really close and cool with my boss, he's like, yeah, I need to hire a Black woman. Like, and I wanted to know why, but I didn't ask why, but I was proud I got the role and I got my clearance. So it was a very, very, very good, reputable company too. It was at BAE Systems. So I was like, oh, my bag after this.
Yeah, I know why he wanted to hire you. It's the same reason, you know, and he's the villain on the internet best because people don't listen to him. But kind of like what Kev Samuel said about one of his positions when he had to start up a team, he pretty much first person he hired was a Black woman. Mm-hmm. And Black women dwell in like management and lead type of roles because y'all always act like y'all somebody's mama and y'all want to get stuff done. And if you need something to get done, that works because, you know, y'all not going to be passive about it because like, shit, they going to fire me first. But
right.
But yeah. That's what's up, man. I feel like, and here's the thing too, one of my gripes about school, one of my first clients last year went to my same school. I went to Louisiana Tech.
Okay, nice.
And they had the same. I graduated, I'm sounding like an old head, but I graduated in November of 2013.
Oh, wow. How old are you? So,
yeah, I'm young.
2010. Well, 2011.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I'll be the big 30 next year. Nice. Next March. But they had the same curriculum that I had. And none of that stuff that we did in the curriculum was really useful. And I was like, why are they still teaching these people the same stuff they taught me 7-8 years ago? That's an issue. And I don't know how many colleges are still teaching the same curriculum, which is why you see the rise of self-studying, boot camps. Like, you know, even now when I had a con, they asked me about, oh, should I get this? Or I was like, man, look, do this. You know, take your time because I'm not trying to have you spending all this money and you still be out here with your hands out because you can't find what you're doing because you're not executing your plan properly. But that's been one of the things too, is like, I definitely need to figure out a way to probably, I've been thinking about trying tapping in with them and seeing if they would take, you know, my expertise on some things. So we'll definitely see how that goes.
Yeah.
But so what are for, I'm gonna pivot back to MBS Tech. For MBS Tech, what roles, I guess, do you say, if you was to say right now, the people that come help you, which ones do you specialize in the most that people come to you for?
You know, I feel like, you know, I'll go back to the question that you asked about how did I get my first role in tech? I think back then, and some people who aren't in tech too, I really don't think that people have this notion that you have to be super technical. You have to be, you have to know how to code, which I don't know how to code. I have no desire to ever code. But people think you have to have these super technical skills and you don't. And so my program, because I had one, I'm bilingual, so that was a plus in the
really, what's the other language?
Spanish. I actually lived in Costa Rica after I graduated college to learn Spanish. I just studied Spanish for 8 hours a day at a language school because I knew I had this international relations degree. I'm like, okay, but girl, do you know how to speak Spanish? Like, you know, what's international about you? So I'm like, okay, instead of getting a new car, let me have my parents send me to Costa Rica to live and learn Spanish. And so so I already had that skill. I can speak Spanish. And the missile was funded by some Spanish speaking countries. A lot of my team was older white men, so they didn't know how to speak Spanish. And then I had like this project management type of skill set. So all of that, I was in a tech space, but I wasn't necessarily doing tech. You know what I mean? Yeah. So I mean, being that person that can speak to, you know, your technical people and kind of transfer that stuff so it sounds like plain language to people who aren't technical was helpful. So, yeah, like you don't have to be super technical to get into these tech spaces. There's so many different roles within tech that do not require technical skills.
Thanks.
But let me get back to your question. So I am, in regards to MBS tech, I always try to see where, because a lot of people are coming from a space that is not technical. And so I assess, like, what are your strong suits? And so I figure out what type of path you can go down that will help you get into tech. And so it's not a one, you know, one stop, like a one size fits all for just like, oh, yeah, if you want to come to me to do this, then yeah. But I think I know so many different roles. I feel like I've been in tech for almost 10 years, maybe longer than that. So I know what the tech space looks like. And so I can definitely assist a lot of different range of people with getting into tech. It doesn't have to be one type of role or one. I mean, yeah, cyber, yeah, I can help you get into that. But also ITSM, project management. So it's a wide range.
Yeah, that's definitely just a pivot off of what you said about not being technical. I tell people all the time, like one of my clients, she wants to be more technical, but she is probably about to get offer like a project management role that's in tech. But it's like one of the better qualities of being like, you know, you want, whatever you want to call it, career coach, advisor, counselor, whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. I think one of the better qualities is getting people to see, you know, the skills that they do have. Like, I spoke to you about like my first Hispanic caller. Shout out to Paul. A lot of my people come from my Twitter and YouTube.
Nice.
So a lot of times people watch enough of my YouTube videos to be like, you know, I want to do something similar to him. And he's currently in physical security. So I was telling him that there are spaces for physical security in cybersecurity. But two, I explained to him that technically what he does, you do technically what a SOC analyst does at like a lower level that's physical. And then when I made it make sense for him, he was like, oh, I never thought about it like that. I was like, yeah. So, I was like, that's the goal.
Stuff like that.
What'd you say?
So like, how did you kind of help him better understand like how he could work in a SOC role? Like,
so I start asking them questions like, for example, we most know most security guards work at a desk. So I was like, I'm pretty sure that you've been at what X amount of time you've been at that specific building. You know, a lot of times you recognize who's normal, who's not. You look at other things like on your screen when you can see stuff's going on. I say it's similar in a SOC environment. You know, once you learn your environment, you learn what's normal traffic, what's bad traffic, what's something you don't recognize that you may need to look into just to make sure it's nothing. I say, so it's the same type of mindset. You just have to translate it over to the job.
Thanks.
And that's kind of like normally even when I do like for that, I had one guy, I think his name was Nicholas. Shout out to Nick. He has been an EMT most of his life. And I directed him directly to incident response. I'm pretty sure you've seen different things with people. You recognize right away, oh, this is what's going on with him. But him, I said, you know, same thing with incident response. He was like, yeah, I was looking into that. So I think that's one of those good things, too, is where sometimes a lot of people want to go straight and go different really to something that, you know, which they can do eventually. But sometimes I focus on, say, you're skill set fits this right now. We can pivot into that later, but just get in the door. Mm-hmm. Just get in the door and then you can work on everything else later. And that's what I focus on. I'm telling people that too. And you know, I'm also one of the people that don't tell people to be, I'm a mix in between you being greedy and not. For my client that literally got the offer yesterday, we talked. And as I talked to him some more, I was like, you know what? I'm gonna make this your discretion to see if you actually want to go back and counter, because honestly, he kind of was like, well, not like me, because I was getting paid more than he was at the time when I had got my first cyber role. Mm-hmm. But the way he was getting underpaid in his IT support role, I was like, yeah, bro, take it, because his situation doesn't happen too often. It was like, it been in with 2 or 3 weeks, he got a sec plus, and he really just started, he was like, well, the last two people are like the clients who've actually been really utilized subscription plans to listen to me when I say, all right, this is what we need to do. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell people in my article that every time when I talk to people, because I'm kind of like a record player when I tell them stuff. So eventually I will have my facts section up on my site. But I was like, listen, all the shebang and the tools and the degrees and the certs, all that's fun. But if you don't go sell yourself, nobody will find you. I was like, we need to get you on, you know, whether you're on Twitter or LinkedIn, that's how you're going to land the role. And sure it's enough.
I tell people all the time, I'm trying to think. So back in the Stone Ages, I think I'm so old, I'm not even that old, but when I first was applying for jobs, like I used to use like Craigslist, which is like so old, and LinkedIn, but since Craigslist is like, nobody uses that anymore. It's probably scams on there now, but LinkedIn has been I have not applied for a job in years. Somebody's always reaching out to me on LinkedIn, and I tell people, make sure that LinkedIn is tip top shape, because and you have that your settings set so that you're looking for a job. And I keep mine on all the time because I'm always looking for a new opportunity. And I tell people, when a recruiter or whoever reaches out to you, that means that they want you, they found you, and now they're reaching out to you if you're interested. So, I mean, not to say that I haven't applied for jobs, but all of my jobs, like I would say, it's been a while since I actually apply for a job and got the job. Someone's always found me on LinkedIn.
I know, man. Look, somebody same way with me. And that's another thing where I tell some people who aren't in the space that don't know what the veterans know. I'm like, you can't fool me, because if I look at your resume or something like that and you got, you know, X amount of years experience, but you're not getting calls or interviews, something isn't adding up. Because when you got the experience and the right tool set and the buzzwords, you can't stop them from finding your inbox.
Yeah, I agree. Like, I really tell people, like, LinkedIn is like low hanging fruit when it comes to jobs. Like, you don't even have, as long as if you invest the money or if you invest the time, whatever you need to do to make sure your LinkedIn is on point, that's low hanging fruit when it comes to a job. Like, people will find you. And what better way to land a new job than someone to come find you?
Thanks. And look, and since this actually turned to a LinkedIn segment, what are some, let's go like with three tips that you would, you know, advise somebody to do when it comes to their LinkedIn.
Okay, three tips. I would make sure that if you are in a tech space and you have certifications, that you use your, I forgot the name of the badge. There's a badge that you get when you obtain certification.
The claim badge.
Make sure that is on there so that people do not have to feel, have to even look or doubt or anything your technical skills when it comes to your cert. That is something that you should definitely have on your LinkedIn. Just to prove your proven skills there. I will also get, what's really helped me is to have people write recommendations for you on LinkedIn. I've asked my supervisor, I actually typed up a recommendation for my supervisor before I left the job, sent it to them, and they just sent it and put it on my LinkedIn. And these are from people in high spaces. So definitely have those recommendations on there. And I would always make sure, I'm probably do four, make sure that your LinkedIn has your latest. Every time you do something new or innovative or problem solve or project is completed, put that on your resume. Put that on your resume. And always keep your, make sure that in recruiters that you are always looking for a job.
Nice. Yeah, recommendations are huge. Shout out to Roshan. Roshan gave me like my latest and greatest recommendation. That I didn't even know he was going to put that spin on it like that. But
yeah,
I'll add one to what you mentioned. So this will be tip five. Mm-hmm. Have a good profile photo.
Tell me about it.
Yeah, and then if you're a guy, you know, and I don't really believe in colorism, but I'll put it like this. You know if you're handsome or not, man. So if you ain't got a haircut and you ain't smiling, you in a dark room, you might scare some recruiters off. So you need to get you a good headshot with you smiling, or at least not looking scary or intimidating, because at the end of the day, it's going to be people over process. So the people have to work there and you got to look approachable. So that's one of the, just like, you know, the issues, you know, you run into like trying to holler at a girl, you know, when you out because, you know, she got that meme, she got the RBF on and she looking mean. You like, all right, I guess you don't want nobody to come talk to you. You keep on right. walking. So that's one of the things you got to work on for your LinkedIn. And to segue into kind of what you talked about, you know, putting on your LinkedIn and your resume. That's true. I always try to tell people to, well, some people, if they have enough experience, I'll add like a highlight section of like some high level exciting things that they did in their roles, because that always stands out. Because recruiters don't have that long when they're looking at resumes. That's what I tell people. Like, some people are putting a bullet for everything they did at work, and I'm like, no. No, just let's summarize what you did at work and let's add like some bullet points for like nice things you did at work. Mm-hmm. I don't want to see, I'm not going to read everything you did at work. It just takes too long. It's not appealing to look at. So yeah. That's another little jewel out there, guys. Summarize your work history and make accomplishments or bullet points within your job experience section. And
make sure your resume and your LinkedIn match. Do not, like, because recruiters will say, hey, you know, I came across your LinkedIn, yada, yada, yada. If you're interested, can you send me the latest, you know, your latest copy of your resume and a good time to reach you? And then you'll send, and then I know people who sent in an outdated resume. I'm like, what? Make sure those things match. You got to make sure, you know.
Matter of fact, sometimes for some things, like, well, I can say this because I do it. I tell people this just like kind of like working out. If you want to stay ahead of your game, like you said, leave your stuff always on open to work and just interview, start interviewing. Because one, it shows you what they're looking for, and it can show you what your weaknesses are. But with the interviews and that going on, I had a brain fart. I'm mad. That's why I tried to filibuster what I was going to say about starting the interview process. I started crafting, like, depending on what it was. I'll send me your latest. I'll go and craft it. And I used to do simple stuff. Sometimes I ain't go and change my summary. I might just put, here's another gem, guys. Like, you can put, when you're applying to a role, you can title in that resume what the role is. So whatever it was, I think one of them was like lead security analyst or remote, whatever. I would throw that in there. And certain times when I see some of the job skills, I'll say, you know, I use Splunk in my role. So let me put exactly what they said. Oh, I made Splunk dashboards and stuff like that. So, you know, it's a little bit of stuff you guys can do just to stand out. Don't go on there and just
lying.
You know, yeah. You know, why you always lying? Don't be lying, man. Tell the people, you know, hey, if you don't know something, you don't know it. They'll respect you for telling the truth than lying.
Yeah, because exactly. I mean, I'm not saying like, okay, I'll say this. Like, I'm not saying like flat out lie, but you can tweak stuff where it's not a lie, but it's not 100% the truth, but it's not a lie. You know what I mean? Like, if you know you've been, you know, you added some web parts on SharePoint, but you know you're not back in development, don't say you're a SharePoint developer. But you can definitely speak to how you use SharePoint to, you know, improve, or da da da. Like, you can still do that, but don't you know? People definitely lie on their resume.
And I'm gonna go right here. I got two things to throw in. Number one is, like, if you're gonna lie, know what you lied about on your resume. At least talk a good game. Even if you don't know how to do it, get to the job then and be like, man, shoot, I'm on Google just like everybody else. But that's something I want to touch on. So far, I don't know why that DMV area makes it so hard on y'all when it comes to getting regular jobs in cyber.
I think the cyber industry, I don't even think it's just our area. I think it's the cyber industry itself is, they want a lot of experience. They want people to come in with experience, and that's just not the case. It's so funny you said that, because I was on a call with my director, and that company said that the demand for cybersecurity professionals is so high, but they cannot find people to fill those roles. And that's across the board. And they have now created a program within their company. This is a huge tech company. They have created a program within their company for people, anybody who works there, to go through this process, go through this, you know, this process this course to help create these people to fill these job roles. And I'm talking about from the, I mean, not from the bottom, but from sales support, customer service, whoever is interested, they are now like kind of crafting these people through their program in-house so that they can then fill these roles. I think it's a thing. I think it's across the board. People just want cybersecurity professionals to have experience, and you can't, I mean, you're not going to get that. You're not going to find that everywhere.
See, I don't, but it can't, this is the reason why, and not what you're talking about, as the industry as a whole, they want stuff that don't even make sense on some of their roles. I will kid you not, when I'm going through stuff with clients and we're just looking, I show them some skills they need to work on, I'll just filter for entry level. I show them a way, like, you can read this and know this is an entry level. I'm like, you can pay attention to the job duties. I don't really care about the years because that's just cap. Just pay attention to what it's asked you to do. Because certain people wouldn't know how to do something unless you already did it before at a high level. Right. But why I'm fixated on DC or DMV area, because I've noticed a trend with them wanting people to have like 7 certs and 5 years. So you do have the things where they have programs going on trying to help people. And, you know, it is some stuff where it's fabricated. But in this sense, I understand why. But I don't know what it's going to take for them to like kind of lower that down, because all these people should be hired because they want to work. They are people that are putting in the money and the effort to, you know, get the knowledge. But now they're kind of stuck because they're still going through the ringer.
I will say, I mentioned SolarWinds that affected a lot of government agencies and So I'll say this. I'll say that the government, in my opinion, has now changed their thoughts and feelings about it. Because SolarWinds was huge. And I don't think people, I mean, and your listeners should definitely, if they're interested in cybersecurity, understand how that supply chain, you know, attack kind of work and, you know, just the ins and outs of that and why it's so important. Cause it was such widespread. It got to, like military. I mean, it just was bad. And then the thing about it is they don't even know if they even resolved the issue. Like they, because they did it so, so good that they don't even know if they actually even fixed it. But the government has now kind of, in the crazy, and I'll say this too, the government wasn't even the one who knew about it first. So it's that private government piece that kind of needs to come together and work together much, much closely. But I feel like now, because my agency was affected by it, I think that the government is kind of changing their thoughts and feelings on experience. That was such a huge hit. And so they know they need to fill these roles. And I think they're completely aware, because that call was with, you know, with my agency and another tech organization. And so they're aware. I don't know how long it's going to take to create change, but they are definitely aware.
Okay. Well, that's good, you know, because I tell people all the time when they call in, I say, man, I say, look, expand your search to the U.S. because there's a lot of remote stuff. I was like, you can get in somewhere. Because I have a friend who's a Izzo, and she's in the area. She was talking about a guy who lied about everything and
oh no,
he didn't know how to do nothing. And so that he should just been straight up or whatever. I think one of the tools that Izzo uses was Emacs.
Yes, we use a lot of different things.
I've seen them like some of y'all resumes, Emacs, and some of the other stuff. And they want to make sure y'all know how to use that.
Yeah, have you seen CSAM on there or Spider?
I might have. I've only looked at a couple Izzo resumes. Mm-hmm. Only a couple, but I'm glad I have somebody directly to pivot them to now, because that like me.
Yeah, my homegirl, she's an ISO, and she's at 400K. So once you get in, I can say like, and I think the biggest thing too is the clearance part of things too, especially with our area. A lot of people want you to have a clearance. A clearance is expensive. So a lot of companies want you to already have that, but you're like, well, how am I supposed to get one if no one's offering me a clearance? I will say there are some unpaid internships. If you're maybe you can work 2 jobs, maybe you can, you're just fresh out of college and you're willing to, but there are some unpaid internships within the government that will give you clearance. So if you're in school and you want to do a semester of an internship with, let's say, State Department, I know they're giving out clearance, secret clearances for an unpaid position for the fall. So, like, you just say, hey, I'm going to thug it out. I'm going to do this, but I'm going to have my clearance. In the long run, that will help you in the end. So, just trying to think of creative ways to people get jobs.
Yeah. I mean, I know ways. We both know the ways. It just take longer than what they wanted to take. And I can totally understand that. You know, I actually need to check on one of my old clients from last year. I'm going to probably text them or something today. But I'm trying to think if we covered everything. I think we did. Now, this is something that you didn't want to say and cover.
Oh, if we are at the end, I wanted to offer, if anyone is interested in obtaining the Security Plus, I guess we can kind of create rules for, I'll do a giveaway. I'll sponsor someone that for the Security Plus. I'll pay for their voucher. So I guess maybe they could follow you, follow me, and then we'll pick a winner. But I don't know how you want to do it, but maybe they can listen to this because this will be at the end. So we can say, you know, to the, you know, the full episode, yeah. And find out how to win. So maybe if they follow you, I don't really care for attention. That's what I told you in the beginning. Like, I want a role where I don't have to have so much attention on me. But if you want them to follow you on, you know, subscribe to your YouTube, follow you on Instagram, follow you on Twitter, maybe they can follow my NBS tech page. Mm-hmm. Personal page, and then we'll pick a winner. You and I will just pick a winner, and I'll pay.
I mean, I think that'll work. Especially, I'm gonna probably drop snippets of this throughout the week. Like, tune in. You don't want to miss this episode. Tune in to the end for, you know.
Yeah, so I'm definitely happy to sponsor a Security Plus voucher.
I'm trying to see, and I'm probably do something like this. We're just talking at the end. It might be on some, like, you know, hey, in order to, you know, get that voucher, you might have to tell us, you know, what was Miranda's undergrad major or something like that.
Nice. Okay. Cool. But I definitely have them, like, subscribe to your YouTube and follow you on Twitter.
Oh, yeah. Oh, definitely. I got another giveaway I'm going to do for some, like, monitor arms. Anyway.
Okay, cool.
I can't use.
Oh. Yeah. So, and I'll pick the winner on the 15th. That way, that's at least 2 weeks for people to do it, give them enough time. And then I'll just, pay for their voucher.
Sure, man. This has been good. We definitely got a lot to learn about you, and, you know, we could foster, you know, this relationship even more, hopefully to do more great things in the space.
Yes, I especially in my next program, my doctoral program, and then going on to, like, create my summer programs for Black kids. But definitely, you know, foster, maybe you can come and speak. Maybe you can help me put the program together, whatever we can kind of do to work together to do that. I would love to work with you in the future. So,
sure thing. Can you tell guys, like, your website or anything else you want them to follow you on before we let you out of here?
Sure. So you can follow me on Instagram at mbs.tech there. I kind of, I don't want to say drop gems, but I definitely provide resources for you to obtain security. So, you know, knowledge or certs or whatever the case may be there. I'm starting to get more active on there now. So definitely follow that. You can visit me at mbs.tech.io. And yeah, I look forward to working with everyone, or, you know, just following and getting some knowledge. So
that's what's up. Everybody, you guys know where to reach me at. All my stuff is always in the links. TechnoChatter, YouTube, Textual Consulting, Instagram. I forgot what my Twitter is all the time, but it's there too. You guys can find me on there. But hey, it's been another episode of Let's Talk Tech. Appreciate you guys for tuning in. And let's stop recording.